This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, happy winter solstice. It was the shortest day of the year, and we are now moving out of the darkness and into the light, which feels, I don't know, really good. And also, happy holidays. Hanukkah just ended, and so happy Hanukkah to those who celebrate. And Christmas is just around the corner. So I hope you are seeing family and friends and loved ones and, you know, having a little joy and peace this holiday season. So I know my guest today from way back in the day. And if you've listened to my show and know me at all, you know way back in the day always means the 90s. Let me tell you about her. Catherine Gates' academic background is in anthropology, but her real education came from the DIY zine scenes of the 1980s. Catherine began collecting niche kink publications in 1985 and has spent the last 20 years exploring the internet's isolated back corners, interviewing hundreds of kinksters, and witnessing unique forms of erotic play. The first edition of her book, Deviant Desires, which was originally published in 2000 from Juno Books and Research Publications, was the first to cover things like pony play, balloon play, and furries in depth. And it won a Sexual Freedom Award. In 2006, Catherine curated a year-long exhibition called Kink, Geography of the Erotic Imagination at Museum of Sex. Catherine's encyclopedic knowledge of the kinky backwaters has led her to an ongoing project of mapping of the erotic imagination. The kink map has been used in college human sexuality textbooks, and you can also find it online. The fully revised and updated edition of Deviant Desires, A Tour of the Erotic Edge, is now available from Powerhouse Books, and you can get it wherever books are sold. Tonight, we are going to talk all about so-called deviant desires and fetish. Please welcome my guest, Catherine Gates. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Tristan. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, my God. We know each other for way, way, way back in the day in New York.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, my gosh. And so, you know, when I read that your book was first published, it was first published in 99 or 2000?
Right. I guess, you know, it was like January 2000.
Right. So it came out in 99. And I dare say you were a very early adopter in that you covered this wide, wide spectrum of fetishes, erotic fetishes. And it was at a time when really no one else was writing about it, not in any sort of mass market way, not in any kind of mainstream way, not with the sort of depth and breadth that you were doing it. So how did you find yourself sort of an expert on fetishes before fetishes were even known, like, to the larger public?
Well, I mean, I guess it was just due to my own curiosity, I mean, an enthusiasm. And I used to be in desktop publishing, and I had made all of these weird books with people like Annie Sprinkle and Joe Coleman and stuff like that. And I would tour these books around to these little tiny stores like See Here in New York or Quimby's in Chicago, some of which no longer exist. But back then, they always had a section with zines in them, And zines were like, you know, this was the very first part of the desktop publishing revolution. People who, you know, just had a computer were able to print something that they were interested in and see if anyone else was interested in it too. And so there would always be these little zines. Like there was in New York, there was one called the Yankee Clipper, and it was devoted just to images, stories, and clippings from movies of women getting their heads shaved bald. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and I would keep seeing these, and I knew that they were these work, they were this the result of a great passion on somebody's part, and a fascination and an obsession and a faith that somewhere out there were other people like them and they weren't alone. But there was really no way for them to know except to just put this thing out there and hope. Mm-hmm. This was, of course, before the internet. So, and I loved that focus and intensity. And at the time, so I started collecting these zines, I mean, obsessively. I mean, I have huge quantities of these, and that was really the start. That and the fact that, you know, I knew a lot of people who were doing professional domination and things back then. And so I would always ask them for stories. I wanted to know, you know, what is the most surprising client you ever had? And I would collect those stories just in my head, thinking about it as, you know, I just sort of was curious, and I wasn't really thinking about it as a project until Andrea Juno came to me and said, I think you should do a book. You know, we did Modern Primitives about body modification, and we did, you know, Incredibly Strange Music about people who collect music. Why don't we do something like Incredibly Strange Sex? And so that was what started me on it. And I was coming at it from a kind of let's all be freaks viewpoint. You know, like we're all freaks. Let's celebrate freakiness.
And well, that's the other thing that's so striking is the tone of the book that when even the first edition of it is so sort of curious and compassionate. There isn't a sense of like, oh my God, these people are insane. They're freaks. Their fetishes are weird in a bad way. It had a tone to it that was just like, hey, there's people into this. This is why they're into it. This is what it looks like. This is what they do. This is why they like it. Next, you know, and then it just sort of went from there. It never kind of made it like overly salacious or tried to sort of talk down to the subjects that you had covered.
Right. I mean, I think there's an element of humor in it, but I hope that the humor is the kind of humor that comes from joyous surprise rather than any kind of, you know, punching down at anybody. I mean, you know, some of this stuff is hilarious, honestly. And I think the people who have these kinks are kind of aware, you know, what I'm doing is a little bit absurd, but it does it for me, you know, so why the heck not?
Right, right.
And I was, you know, and I found myself, you know, I knew that there were really great books out there about BDSM already, like Different Loving by Gloria Braim. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of sort of more kind of books that were supposed to be sexy, you know, books that about fetish that were lots of pictures of corsets and high heel boots and things like that. But what I was really interested in was real people, not fashion models and not professional photographers, like ordinary people, and how they deal with some fantasy that they have that really is kind of beyond the pale for most people. You know, how do they create the pornography they need? You know, and in this, again, before the internet, it's not like you could go do a search for it. You know, you couldn't Google balloon fetish. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to go and try to see if you could find pictures of women blowing up balloons or men blowing up balloons or whoever you want to see doing that. And you'd have to make it yourself. You'd have to make drawings or photo montages and things like that. And so that need to create your own erotica was fascinating to me. That creativity and the kind of bravery to me of people doing that.
And how did you find a bunch of these people? You said you knew some pro-doms. But the other thing that strikes me about some of these fetishes is this is also before the sort of organization and visibility of kinky people out in the world, where if you want to find kinky people now, you just sort of Google kink and the name of the nearest, you know, small city, and there it is.
Right.
But back then, how did you find someone who had a smoking fetish, someone who had a foot fetish, how did you find them?
Well, the zines were the first place I started. So, I mean, I can list like the first three zines that I really knew these were going to be the meatiest part of my project were Equus Eroticus magazine, which was for pony play. Mm-hmm. I think they'd have maybe one issue by the time I, you know, contacted the person who edited and created it, Paul Reed. Splash magazine from the UK, which was for the messy stuff. And what was the third? Oh, Giantess magazine, which was very much a homemade thing by this guy, Ed Lunt, in Long Island. So that's how I contacted them. And they, you know, recommended to me to talk to other people within their particular scenes. So that was my entree. But I think I'm kind of a nerd. So I was online and making websites myself in 1992. So, you know, and I was on some of the earliest bulletin boards and things like that. So the balloon fetish was something that I found out through the internet, such as it was at the time. Mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. being quite limited compared to now. So, and sometimes what happened would be, I would often end my interviews with one person saying, "So what do you think is the weirdest fetish out there?" And it's sort of funny how people with one kink will decide, you know, you think what I'm doing is weird. Let me tell you about these guys. And they would, you know, point me to somebody else. And then that would send me off on the next one. And, you know, everybody thinks the shit eaters are like the bottom of the pile. You know, mm-hmm. they're the ones that's like, well, I'm not gross because look at those people. So that was always interesting. I remember one of my most fascinating topics, I thought, were the crush freaks. And this was...
So explain what crushing is.
So the crush freaks are people who want to watch someone stomp on a living creature. And for some people, or it may not be living, it could be, you know, a hamburger or, you know, a ketchup packet or something that will nicely squidge and splatter and explode upon the pressure of the foot. So it's a variation of the foot fetish. And some crush freaks want to see someone stomping on an insect or a worm or some living creature. And of course, you know, there are notorious stories in the press about people who wanted to crush larger creatures that we would consider pets, like cats. But that's really, really beyond the pale for everybody, I'm sure. But for the most part, crush freaks just want to see somebody stomp on something and use their feet to be incredibly powerful and to apply intense pressure. So that was Mike the Pie Man, whose own fetish was wanting to have women throw pies in his face. And I asked him, "Mike, what do you think is the craziest thing out there?" And he said, "Oh, well, you got to talk to my friend Jeff Valencia, because he likes to watch women stomp on bugs." So that's how, you know, I sort of migrated through these scenes, hearing about people from each other.
Right. But interesting that there was sort of like a perv hierarchy. That's very interesting. That's something we'll talk about. But we got to take our first commercial break and hear from our fantastic sponsor, The Pleasure Chest. So everyone, listen to these commercials. And when we come back, more about the wide, wide world of fetishes with Catherine Gates. Stay with us. Hey, everyone. I love toys that leave an impression. Whether it's your first encounter with the magic wand or the luxurious feel of a leather paddle, everyone has that special toy that's both an implement of pleasure and an aphrodisiac. Haven't met the right toy yet? Well, the Pleasure Chest invites you to fall in lust. With boutiques in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, the Pleasure Chest staff is committed to helping you find the right toy in a safe and non-judgmental environment. Visit pleasurechest.com and browse their Educators Picks section for some of my favorites, or visit their special collections page and get inspired. Use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free massage candle with your purchase, courtesy of the Pleasure Chest. B-Vibe is a premium collection of anal sex toys. Their products feature different sizes to accommodate users of all shapes, sizes, and experience levels. B-Vibe's high-end designs are couples-friendly, body-safe, and offer innovation aimed to create an exceptional user experience. You know I've got really high standards when it comes to anal toys, and I am in love with these. Plus, they stand behind each item with an easy-to-understand, hassle-free warranty. Dubbed as the Apple of anal, learn how B-Vibe and its premium anal plugs are engaging couples to discover the amazing pleasures of anal play. Visit bvibe.com and use coupon code Tristan to receive 20% off your purchase.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with the woman who really was on the cutting edge when she did the first edition of this book, and now a new edition is out. It's Catherine Gates, and the book is called Deviant Desires, A Tour of the Erotic Edge. And it is all about fetishes and the folks who have them and do them. It covers everything from pony play to foot and shoe fetishes, balloon fetishes, crushing fetishes, food fetish, feeders and gainers, medical stuff. I mean, it just goes, the list sort of goes on and on. And one thing I'm curious about, Catherine, is in your experience, how many of these folks identify with and sort of belong to BDSM communities? Because one thing that I think is interesting is that to me, all of these fetishes can easily fit under that umbrella term of BDSM. And yet I know there are people who are into certain things who don't necessarily consider them BDSM and don't necessarily identify with community. They're like, I'm into spanking, but I'm not a kinky person. I'm not a leather person. What do you think about that? And what has been your experience with folks who have these fetishes?
Well, I think that's one of the things that's really changed since the first book. When the first book, for example, I was like the first person to talk to balloon fetishists and ask them what they were doing and find out more about what turned them on, what's the eroticism behind inflating and popping balloons. And, you know, they were so unknown at the time that they didn't really connect themselves to other communities at all and didn't sort of realize that what they were doing had a lot of elements of BDSM in the sense that many balloon fans really like to fantasize about their desired partner torturing them with balloons by slowly and teasingly inflating the balloons and squeezing them so that the balloons looks like it's about to pop and they can watch it become more and more transparent and listen to it, listen to the squeaking sounds as the latex becomes more and more fragile. And you know, many balloon fetishists are very frightened of the pop. Some of them don't ever want to hear it pop. It's just too frightening. But that fear is one of the things that, you know, makes the heartbeat faster and makes you flush and gets you excited. And so a lot of the scenarios for balloon fetishists are scenarios of dominance and submission. their scenarios where they want that person to masterfully torture them with a balloon. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so the first balloon fetishists that I interviewed were talking about this, and I said, well, but that's BDSM, you know? And they're like, well, but there's no spanking and nobody's wearing corsets. And I'm like, no, I think you don't quite understand what BDSM is, you know, that it's not all that sort of stuff that you see in sort of fashion magazines. You know, it really is about consensual, negotiated, trying to find ways to turn somebody on using power. And so one of the first guys I met, I said to him, well, why don't you go to a meeting of the Eulenspiegel Society in New York? Now, the Eulenspiegel Society, I think that's been around since the 70s. It mm-hmm. is one of the oldest, longest standing heterosexual oriented BDSM communities in the world. And they've been having meetings forever, and they have special interest groups. And I, one of the sections of the Pony Play chapter was about the Eulenspiegel Society's Equestrian Club, which was, so that was a special interest meeting within the Eulenspiegel Society. And I said, you know, you could maybe try to see if you could create a special interest group in the Eulenspiegel Society for balloon stuff. And it was kind of a revelation, I think, to him that BDSM is really more of an erotic philosophy than it is a list of behaviors or mm-hmm. tools, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people think, oh, BDSM is like, okay, there's flogging and there's whipping and there's spanking and these are the tools that you use and this is the language you use. No, it's more of a worldview, an erotic philosophy. And so, you know, I think that was one of the things that's changed the most, which is that I think that the language of BDSM, and particularly the language of negotiated consent, is something that has become far more part of the conscious awareness of even vanilla people.
Mm-hmm. And, well, absolutely. And that's why you're sort of in this unique position, right? That having done this research and really know so much about these fetishes since the 90s, to then fast forward to 2017 and see the explosion of sort of mainstream conversations about kink, to see FetLife, you know, the creation of FetLife and how it's flourished as a social media platform for kinky people. I mean, what do you make of how the internet has changed kink and people who have fetishes?
Well, I think, you know, I watched the internet explosion happen to these people, and it was sort of an amazing thing to watch because I'm 55 now. So a lot of the people that I was interviewing were my age and older. And these are people who didn't get online until, you know, maybe 1999 or so. They'd spent their entire lives, you know, up, you know, 30, 40, 50 years thinking, I am the only person in the world who's into balloons. I am a lonely weirdo. I'll never, ever meet anybody who's into this who'll ever play with me with this stuff because they think I'm a pedophile or something. And so I'm just this lonely freak and I'll always be alone, right? And so they finally get online after 30 years of this and they type in, you know, the first thing they do with Google or whatever it was at the time, Yahoo, they type in balloon fetish, you know, sort of looking over their shoulder, worrying that somebody's going to find out about it. And bam, they come up and find this online community of other people who are interested in. I mean, this was life changing. I mean, this one balloon fetishist told me he practically fell off his chair and started crying because he suddenly knew he wasn't alone and that there were people out there and they weren't crazy and they weren't pedophiles and they had partners and they could play. And they're like, welcome, you know, we're one of us, welcome. So that kind of experience is not something that any kid today will ever have. You know, I think that, you know, kids are going online and learning about all this stuff very early. So they never have that sense that they're the only one in the world. I mean, that is a wonderful thing. I mean, the sense of, you know, The rule 34 of the internet, if it's out there, someone's making porn of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of a joke. It's totally true.
It is.
And it's absolutely true. I was like, I could have written that one for you. But, you know, it's like they know that they're not the only one. And isolation is probably one of the most dangerous things to a person's mental health. The Absolutely. Sense of loneliness and isolation, of not being able to communicate yourself and your needs and your soul and your desires to other human beings is very destructive to people. And it also leads them to do things that are destructive of themselves and other people. And so I think that that has been something that I've watched happen that's been truly wonderful.
And I think it's also given people a language. I mean, sometimes we need to see it to know that we're into it, right? I think it's also expanded people's language, because I still think, you know, we're still operating in a culture where we have a very, very narrow definition of sex and sexuality mm-hmm. and eroticism and pleasure. And so it's so common that someone has a turn on or a kink that falls outside this kind of dominant idea of what you're supposed to be into or what gets you off, right? And I feel like this is a way for people to see that, like, that sexuality is this huge spectrum, right? That we don't, that these things are not as sort of, you know, strange and deviant, to use the word from your book, as we think they are, because look, there's all these people doing them and it's all fine, right? As long as they're doing them consensually.
I mean, it's funny, you know, the title of the book, there were a lot of people who were really not happy with that word deviant being used in the title. And I really just, you know, I sort of said, yeah, but you know, these people aren't part of that straight and narrow path. You know, they've stepped off that straight and narrow path. They're deviating from the path. It's not a bad thing. In fact, you know, go for it. But it still has a negative connotation. And then 4 months after the book came out, this little website started up called Deviant Art. And it was completely a place where people could put their crazy ass art with their really nutty drawings of whatever their, you know, unique little kink was. And it was a playground. They called itself DeviantArt. And I feel very much, you know, justified in my use of that word now.
And I think some people have reclaimed that, in the way that I certainly know kinky people who self-identify as perverts or freaks or deviants. They've reclaimed those terms that were once meant to kind of pathologize them and set them apart as other, but now they self-identify and those words feel good to them. I certainly self-identify as a pervert. And I like that word, and I like that identity resonates with me. We've got to take another commercial break. I don't know how this keeps happening. I have so many questions. I now have to, I don't even know. I'm going to get to like three of them probably. Okay. So let's take another commercial break, hear from our fabulous sponsor, The Pleasure Chest. When we come back, we will talk more about fetishes, and I will ask about some other specific fetishes and how they sort of overlap with other fetishes. So stay with us. More with Catherine Gates when we return. Hey everyone, I love toys that leave an impression. Whether it's your first encounter with the magic wand or the luxurious feel of a leather paddle, everyone has that special toy that's both an implement of pleasure and an aphrodisiac. Haven't met the right toy yet? Well, the Pleasure Chest invites you to fall in lust. With boutiques in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, the Pleasure Chest staff is committed to helping you find the right toy in a safe and non-judgmental environment. Visit pleasurechest.com and browse their educators picks section for some of my favorites, or visit their special collections page and get inspired. Use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free massage candle with your purchase, courtesy of the Pleasure Chest.
B-Vibe is a premium collection of anal sex toys. Their products feature different sizes to accommodate users of all shapes, sizes, and experience levels. B-Vibe's high-end designs are couples-friendly, body-safe, and offer innovation aimed to create an exceptional user experience. You know I've got really high standards when it comes to anal toys, and I am in love with these. Plus, they stand behind each item with an easy-to-understand, hassle-free warranty. Dubbed as the Apple of anal, learn how B-Vibe and its premium anal plugs are engaging couples to discover the amazing pleasures of anal play. Visit bvibe.com and use coupon code Tristan to receive 20% off your purchase.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, the Pleasure Chest has so much going on in the month of December. So, for example, online, there is free shipping on all December orders. And if you spend $100, you get $15. If you spend $150, you get $25. All of this is going on through December 31st. And then in January, their Pleasure Ed program returns in full force with all these fantastic classes that are free. In Los Angeles, Grey Dancer and his Grey Dancers Ropetastic Unconference Extravaganza, aka GRU, is returning to LA. January 5th, there's a meet and greet for that conference or unconference. And January 7th, Grey Dancer and Naya are teaching ritual and rope. In New York City, January 10th, Happy Nude Year, Foreplay 101 with Carly and Leon. And in Chicago, January 10th, Butt Sex Basics with Tanya. You can go to thepleasurechest.com to find out all about those classes and more. I'm talking today with Catherine Gates about the brand new edition of her book, Deviant Desires, all about every sort of fetish you could imagine. And Catherine, I'm interested to know, it seems to be a lot of overlap. Like you mentioned earlier, like part of a foot fetish could be the foot doing certain things, right? And then that becomes its own fetish. And so I'm wondering how you decide sort of how to classify some of these fetishes. So for example, there's a body expansion fetish, which I want you to tell me about. And I assumed that saline injections into the body was part of body expansion, but you actually put it in the medical chapter. So I'm interested to know, like, sort of how you decided to organize it all.
Well, with body expansion, the body expansion scene or community is really oriented to, I would say, absolutely impossible science fiction style body inflation fantasies. So these are people who imagine they got cursed by a gypsy and suddenly their breasts grow to the size of beach balls. Or, they drink a potion and suddenly their bellies, expand and lift them up like a balloon. In fact, many of them mention the original Willy Wonka movie where Violet Beauregard turns into a blueberry as one of the inspiring images for their childhood acquisition of this interest. So saline injection is just too medical and too, meat plumbing reality.
You could actually do it, right?
Yeah. I mean, they want stuff that takes them out of reality into this other place. And in fact, sort of getting to that other place where the impossible is real, where, people can transform into animals or men can transform into women or any of these things, that feels like magic. And that is very, very exciting. That takes them to a place where, excitement can happen. So,
well, that's interesting, too, because some of these fantasies are and fetishes are about fantasy, like the macrophile. Mm-hmm. Whereas some of them, like splashing, you can absolutely make happen in real life. You can get, you know, cans of food and fuck around in them. And so that's another interesting thing, that they're all sort of all considered fetishes, but some of them are in the realm of pure fantasy and some of them you can actually do.
Right. I actually tend not to use the word fetish unless someone themselves uses it, because of, you know, it's funny, I don't have a problem with the word deviant, but I feel like the word fetish has this medical meaning that I try not to use, because it implies an exclusive interest in that object or scenario outside of partners. So I kind of keep away from that word. But in any case, yeah, what I think, you know, a lot of these kinks, as I call them, have a kind of a core kink, which would be a physical object that has a touchy-feely or smelly component to it. So for many of the inflation fans, they may have a core kink for latex, or they may have a core kink for fat. Okay, so in their case, that's the sort of the core material that they want to sniff and touch and lick and smell and rub up against, and then they want to see it grow bigger and bigger, sort of astonishingly, and that's the elaboration of the core kink. For the giantess fans, most of them are into feet, but some of them are into mouths, you know, and so the mouth is the core thing. And so you can make these real by role play with a partner. Like, for example, one of the new interviews in the book is this amazing woman named Jitensha, or Veronica. Her deviant artist name is Jitensha. And she's a tiny, so she likes to fantasize about giant men sort of playing with her as if she's just a little toy, and using her sexually and things like that. And so she makes these just amazing cartoon, you know, graphic novel stories with that as a premise. And so she role plays with her husband by lying on the floor, and he sort of, you know, walks above her and sort of, you know, says, "I'm bigger than you," and all this, or, "and you're tiny, and gosh, haven't you gotten smaller lately?" And that kind of verbal role play to get her into the headspace that's necessary. Mm. So there's, you know, at the core, I don't think she's a foot person, although she does have a lot of feet in her stories. Some giantess fans want to be trampled on. So there's an overlap between the giantess fans and trampling and crush, but not all tramplers are into the giantess things, and not all crush fans are into giantesses, but they're all into feet. So the overlap is amazing, you know.
Right.
Another elaboration of the foot, which is a new chapter in this book, was about the gas pedal pumpers. And you'll see these videos on YouTube, which is, you know, 10 minutes of a woman pressing and revving the motor of a car. And it's mostly focused on what kind of shoe, you know, the description in YouTube is what kind of shoe she's wearing, what kind of car she's driving, and what she's doing. Is she revving? Is she pumping? Is she, you know, pressing the failing brakes? One of these things. And these are the things that are required for the gas pedal pumping fan to get off. You know, they want a particular type of shoe, a particular car, and a particular action of pressing on that gas pedal or brake or whatever. And these videos have like 200,000 views. I mean, you know, most of us would die to have that kind of views on our videos, right? So that's an elaboration of the foot fetish, where the foot, the sort of core kink object, becomes the protagonist of a drama. And it's a drama that follows all of the rules, as I explain in the book, of the erotic equation. So Jack Morin, who is the brilliant sex educator and sexologist who unfortunately passed away, he wrote this great book called The Erotic Mind.
And one of my favorite books of all time.
Right. Totally brilliant.
Brilliant.
And he came up in that book with the erotic equation, desire plus obstacles equals excitement. Well, you know, I saw that and I thought, but it's actually even simpler than that. It's pressure plus resistance equals excitement. It's pressure because all of the kinks that I started seeing had to do with physical pressure or emotional pressure. But it's about you know, two forces pushing against each other. So the gas pedal pumpers, it's exciting to see that foot press against the gas pedal and the resistance of the gas pedal, or the fact that the car refuses to start and it becomes exciting because she's trying to get that car to start. And, you know, she's literally revving the motors of the guy who's trying to get off. Mm-hmm. You know, the body inflation, the inflatable latex clothing, balloons, it's all about pressure. You know, and when we feel excitement and arousal, physiologically speaking, we become engorged and, you know, inflated. And there's a kind of sense of building pressure and engorgement. And that's so many of these kinks are about.
Now, if you would have asked me before I opened the second edition, Tristan, what do you think are the new chapters? What do you think maybe was like there's a page devoted to it in the old edition, but now it's its own chapter, or something that has moved? All of this is in the margins, of course, but something that's moved from the margin of the margin more solidly towards the center. I think if you asked me before I looked, I might say clowns, because I know there's like a whole subgenre of clown porn. Mm-hmm. And or maybe I would have said medical stuff, like more specific medical stuff. But actually, there's a new chapter that even surprised me. And that chapter is called Eat Me, and it's on cannibal play. So tell us about that.
Well, it was actually a cannibal type story that really kind of cemented my obsession with niche kinks. And it was a professional dominatrix I knew who told me about a client she had who every time he was a traveling salesman. And every time he came to New York City, he would call her up and she would come to his hotel room and he would have obtained a large cardboard box and he would draw dials on it. And then she would strip him naked and truss him up and shove him into the box and say, I'm turning up the heat. You are getting crispy. You're feeling your insides steaming. You're going to, you know, your skin is getting all shiny and crispy. And when you're done, I'm going to eat you. And he would have an orgasm right then and there without any kind of physical stimulation whatsoever. And, you know, I didn't quite, you know, I thought, wow, he wants to be objectified, literally. He wants to become an object. So there's a whole thing for various different kinds of objectification, transformation into an object. But then I started, you know, then that Armin Mivas case came out. Now, he was a German engineer, a computer scientist or something, who met another man online in a cannibal chat room in Germany. And the other man's, you know, ultimate fantasy in his life was to be eaten by somebody. And Mivas's ultimate fantasy was to eat somebody. And so they negotiated a consensual scene where Bernd Brandes had himself eaten by Mivas. And it actually happened. And so this is one of those, like, you know, Little Red Riding Hood, don't go into the woods, don't stray off the path because there will be monsters that will eat you story. Mm-hmm. That people tell, you know, oh, if you're kinky, you're going to meet the monster in the woods who's going to eat you. So here's a story of a guy who actually did get eaten, but that's what he wanted.
Right. It was consensual. But do you think like this is a new fetish, like this is a fetish that's sort of on the rise, the cannibal fetish?
You know, what I choose to write about isn't really about like what's cool, it's more about like what I'm curious about. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you that cannibal fetishism is on the rise. I could tell you that there are probably about 8 or 9 websites devoted exclusively to that subject right now.
That's more than one. Okay.
Yeah. No. Right. And I mean, I think that it's been around forever. Mm-hmm. You know, it's part of our human psyches, I think, the terror and excitement at the idea of being consumed by our lover, literally. But, you know, what puts it into the news and what makes it worth thinking about right now is the Mivas case, where you think, you know, how far is it okay to go? Could he possibly really have consented to be killed? Is that really consent or is that insanity? And that was an important topic I thought was necessary to think about.
Yeah. Okay, let's take another commercial break. When we come back, we're going to talk about, I don't know, the most surprising thing about redoing this book for Catherine. That's what I want to know, because there's so much jam-packed in here. So stay with us, more with Catherine Gates when we come back. Hey, everyone. I love toys that leave an impression. Whether it's your first encounter with the magic wand or the luxurious feel of a leather paddle, everyone has that special toy that's both an implement of pleasure and an aphrodisiac. Haven't met the right toy yet? Well, the Pleasure Chest invites you to fall in lust. With boutiques in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, the Pleasure Chest staff is committed to helping you find the right toy in a safe and non-judgmental environment. Visit pleasurechest.com and browse their educators' picks section for some of my favorites, or visit their special collections page and get inspired. Use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free massage candle with your purchase, courtesy of the Pleasure Chest.
B-Vibe is a premium collection of anal sex toys. Their products feature different sizes to accommodate users of all shapes, sizes, and experience levels. B-Vibe's high-end designs are couples-friendly, body-safe, and offer innovation aimed to create an exceptional user experience. You know I've got really high standards when it comes to anal toys, and I am in love with these. Plus, they stand behind each item with an easy-to-understand, hassle-free warranty. Dubbed as the Apple of anal, learn how B-Vibe and its premium anal plugs are engaging couples to discover the amazing pleasures of anal play. Visit bvibe.com and use coupon code Tristan to receive 20% off your purchase.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Hey, are you looking for a last-minute gift for the sex aficionado in your life? I bet you are. Well, I've got a couple ideas for you. First, you could give them the gift of my Sex Educator Bootcamp online. These are online seminars for people who are or want to be professional sex educators. You can find out more about them at sexeducatorbootcamp.com, but I've got a special going on where you can get up to 30% off the regular price with this special secret link. I'm going to link it in the Twitter feed. So you can go to the Twitter feed now, or if you're not listening live, you have to go back and look at the Twitter feed. But I'm going to tell you what it is. It's sexeducatorbootcamp.com/details-discount-enrollment. That's a long one, I know. You're going to work for it, but then you're going to get up to 30% off, which is really cool. So you can give that as a gift. You can also go to my website, puckerup.com, and buy some of my videos or my books. Any purchase you make over $100 between now and the end of December gets you a free phone call with me. You can gift this to the person you give the other presents to, or you can gift this to yourself. But basically, you go to puckerup.com, you spend $100 or more, and then we arrange a phone call by phone or by Skype, and I get to talk to you for 15 minutes about whatever it is you want. That's a pretty cool bonus, right? So go to puckerup.com or go to sexeducatorbootcamp.com and get those prezzies. Get those prezzies happening. Okay, we're talking with Catherine Gates about the new edition of her book, Deviant Desires, which covers everything from smoking fetishes to robots to doctor nurse fetishes to food. I mean, everything. So as you were doing this updated edition, almost 17 years later, what surprised you most about how the world of kink has changed?
I'm you know, rarely surprised or shocked by anything. I have to say, I'm, you know, people try to shock and surprise me and it never works. I'm sort of a bore that way. I would say that I'm delighted in some ways. I mean, the new interviews that I've done are with, I would say almost all of them are with women. And they're with women who have sort of taken the lead in some of these, you know, kink communities where, you know, I mean, for better or worse, the book has always been pretty hetero-oriented. I mean, there were always gay folk in it, but no trans people. And in that scene, which is hetero-oriented, it was really very much about sort of the guys and what they want and what they want to see and what they want women to do for them. And this was always a bit tiresome to me, honestly, and annoying. And so what delighted me was the fact that there were women coming into these scenes or coming out, having had these fetishes all their lives, and deciding, you know what? I'm not interested in being, you know, fulfilling your fantasies. I have my fantasies and you're going to do what I want. Or you're going to ask me really nicely and you're going to be very polite about it and you're not going to harass me online or I'm not going to play. And these women are sort of getting into these communities like the balloon community and saying, you know, and now you're going to be polite and you're going to do what I want. And that has been wonderful to see. I mean, you know, there's Sub Miss Anne in the pony scene. You know, she's really taken up the reins, so to speak, since Equus Eroticus went out of business. You know, in the splashing scene, there's Candy Custard, who, you know, after Splash Magazine went under, she's sort of taken up the reins and become a leader in that scene. Jitensha, I mentioned in the size scene, size is devoted to all things size now. So the giantess people who want their partner to grow huge, or the body expansion people who want to imagine, you know, their partner's belly or butts growing huge, or even people who want to imagine their partners becoming fatter. So the size scene, they all realized, you know, we all have this stuff in common. Why don't we have a con, an actual con like Comic-Con, except this is called Size-Con, and they met in a hotel room near JFK, and they had all these, like, panel discussions and events and, like, you know, how to bring it up to your partner and how to incorporate this into your daily life and how to, you know, what about women in the scene and all this sort of stuff. And this is because this was a woman who took the reins and said, you know what? It's not enough to be online with all this virtual stuff. I want to see you guys face to face and I want to talk to you face to face about this. And I think that urge is something that I'm seeing coming, you know, more from women in these communities who are saying, you know, I'm just not interested in getting, you know, jerk off fodder. That's not what I'm here for. I'm here to talk about this stuff and make meaning and make connections and stuff like that. And that's the thing that has delighted me and surprised me, but in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, and it's almost paradoxical because the internet has sort of both alienated us from each other in many ways. We know how that happens. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it sort of brought people together and then they come together in real life rather than simply online engaging in these sort of fantasies, but have actually like created community spaces that are happening face to face, which I love. And again, which is like the antidote to, like you said, feeling isolated or feeling alone in your kink, right? That you could be at, I didn't even know there was a thing called SizeCon. That's fascinating.
So brilliant. You should go. I mean, you know, I'm a super geek nerd. So I've been going to Comic-Con since like, you know, 1991, before it was cool. When geeks weren't cool.
You should be able to go on the express line or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, that just like the, you know, you come to the SizeCon and there are people who came from all over the country, right? Because, you know, these kinks, size kinks are maybe not, you know, the number 1, 2, 3, maybe number 50 kink in the world. Mm-hmm. So they're pretty obscure. And so there are people, you know, one person in Idaho and one person in, you know, Canada or whatever, and they know the SizeCon's coming. So they all book like plane tickets and they come from all over the place for the first time to ever be who they actually are in front of other people and say, I am a tiny or I am a giant. You know, and they're wearing their, you know, I'm a tiny t-shirts that they had made, and they're overjoyed. I mean, the level of joy and excitement is just, it was like a contact high.
Well, to be, I think that makes perfect sense to me, because to be sort of seen and acknowledged by other folks who get your kink, mm-hmm. who get it and practice it and love it. It must feel miraculous to people, especially if they're in places where there isn't kink community or there isn't BDSM community, and they sort of finally found people, but they've only found them online. To be in a room with folks who really get you is, I think, what most people in this world want.
Right. I mean, it's so hard. I think, you know, you and I have sort of been in the sex world for a long time. But most people, I think, you know, you're sort of typical vanilla person when confronted with somebody who, say, you know, into fantasies of, you know, weight gain or something, is really going to start blowing a gasket, right? And they're going to start getting into, oh, but it's unhealthy, or, oh, you're killing yourself, or, oh, you know, this is, you know, they're going to get all judgmental. And they're going to get all, like, catastrophic about it. It's like, oh, you're going to die. Or, you know, if you're into cannibal play, well, you really want to be eaten. Or, you know, there's these sort of these places that vanilla people go where it's like anything that's off that straight and narrow path. You went into the forest, your little Red Riding Hood, you got off the path. And it's like the slippery slope down from there to murder, rape, and incest, and pedophilia, and they just can't think of anything else. It's like their brains are so sick that it's like, oh, you think you're into balloons? You must want to do children. Oh, you're into stuffed animals? You must want to do children.
Right. This sort of conflation of all the we are almost out of time. So yep. I want to tell people how they can find you and how they can find this book. Okay. Catherine Gates is the author of the newly revised and updated book, Deviant Desires, A Tour of the Erotic Edge. You can get it wherever great books are sold. She also has an amazing thing she created in the book and which is online called Kink Map. You can find it at kinkmap.com. It's a really incredible tool for mapping your erotic desires and seeing where all these things overlap and all these kinks come into play. She's also on Twitter at Kink Map and on Facebook at Deviant Gates. Thank you so much, Catherine, for being on the show.
Thank you, Tristan.
I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Matt, my engineer, and everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of the show. Until then, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Tristan Taramino. You can find the show on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio, and take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.